Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour and I am Ted Maxwell. I've got Matt Neely behind the glass keeping me on time and target as always. And we've got another great day today. We're going to dive into some deep things with three of the leaders inside of the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. And we're going to focus on water, but we're going to focus a lot on permitting process and kind of inform you on how things are meant to work. A lot of times there's a lot of confusion between federal and state rules and others. We're going to dive into a little bit about that. And it's important because, as you know, on the Engagement Hour, I'm always encouraging you to get involved. And a lot of times inside of governmental processes, there's a very key role that the community can play. But it's always important for us to understand what our role is and what it's not. So, Matt, I'm going to take this first segment just to talk about what I think one of our most fundamental rights and responsibilities is in this country, and that's voting. It's important. I strongly encourage everybody to get out and vote, but I strongly encourage you to be an informed voter. Because just because you can walk into the ballot box and you can fill in the bubbles, some people feel they have to fill in, take every vote they can. But the reality is, this election season in Maricopa, the ballots are going to be 3 pages long. In Tucson, it's going to be 2 pages long. So if you're planning on voting in person, give yourself some time, because you're going to need time in there to read them through, especially if you're not already informed. But what I encourage everybody not to do is don't just guess. Learn about the issues. Because when these 13 propositions on the ballot, when they pass, they are then the only way to change them's back at the ballot.
They're set in concrete.
Yep. And there are a ton of them. 11 of them are legislative referrals, and there are 2 that are citizens' initiatives. And the citizens' initiatives obviously have gotten through the process of signature gathering. One, the Make Elections Fair, Matt, still may not be. It will be on the ballot. Mm-hmm. So you will see that when you walk in, but the Supreme Court should be deciding this week on whether they're actually going to count those votes or not.
To further add to the confusion, one of them may or not be valid, whether or not it's passed or not.
That's absolutely true. There are three different election initiatives or citizen initiative propositions related on the ballot. And depending which one, whether... The irony of right now, the latest polling I've seen, both the one that puts in nonpartisan primaries and the ballot initiative that doesn't allow nonpartisan primaries, both right now have a majority of people voting yes. Now, there's a large segment in that one that are still unsure. You know, just realize if you're just going down there and writing yes on all of them, you go, oh, there's 2 election ones. Yes, yes. The one that gets the most wins. So you really need to be informed and think about which one of those you really want to support.
And if I may add just one thing, if you are going to vote by mail, get it done early, because taking it and dropping it off on election day, it still has to go through the verification process, which further slows down the final results.
And Matt, that's a critical point. People who get upset with the voting not being done in a timely manner, if you walk in with your mail-in ballot and drop it off.
Which you can do.
Yeah. And even if you show ID, you can't skip the line for the signature verification. They're still going to do that. They're still going to do it. It's going to delay, especially if the races, which we believe there are going to be many this year that are close, need to count every ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So please.
If you are going to vote by mail, or even if you're going to drop it off at an early voting location, do it at least a week before election
Absolutely.
Day. Just so it's all queued up and ready to count on election day after it's gone through the signature verification and put in the hopper, as they say.
Yep. And if in doubt, you can always go in and get your ballot at the location and show your ID and go through that process, because those ballots get counted that evening. So that's important. I just want to take one other moment. The Regional Transportation Authority Board last week approved a plan to forward to the citizens for input. That's input, feedback, criticism, suggested changes. So over the next about 7 months, you are going to see advertising out there for town halls, how you can get online, how you can fill a survey out, but the citizen input on how we craft the next RTA is going to be critical. If you got questions about the RTA, Sergio and I will be on Wake Up Tucson this Friday at 8 o'clock to talk about it. But we've got the process moving forward, and it is very important because the regional transportation dollars, should they go away, will significantly impact our roads and our both expansion and the ability to keep traffic flowing through our community safely.
You bet.
So one last personal note I'd like to say. Today would have been my father's 90th birthday. I was unfortunate to lose him a couple weeks ago. And Dad, I'm thinking of you. Bob Maxwell had an influence on my life that nobody will really ever truly understand. And there's a lot more to that story. So I love you, Dad, thinking about you. And we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour on Bustos Media here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Appreciate everybody tuning in today. And I think it's a conversation that you're going to find actually very interesting and very fascinating. And we're going to have three folks. I've got Amanda Stone in the office, but in the studio with me, and she's the deputy director of ADEQ, and she serves as their intergovernmental and community outreach director. I think I got that partially right. I might miss that, but Amanda, thank you for being in the studio with me today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you, and I want to introduce, we've got two phone calls. I've got Matt Neely working hard behind the glass today. Trevor Bajori is the ADEQ's Water Quality Division. He's been with them since 2015. He is the director in that division. Before he became the I believe I got the director right now. I'm looking at the notes. Before that, he served as the deputy director inside of ADEQ, and all three of these individuals have been with ADEQ for a long time. We won't hold it against you, Trevor. I know you've got your master's degree in business administration from ASU, but we appreciate you being online too, and just want to get a real quick radio check from you.
Thanks, Ted. It's a pleasure to be here as well.
All right. Thank you, Trevor. And I believe Randy Mattis, the Water Quality Division Deputy Director since 2015, who's got over 19 years with ADEQ, and his experience is predominantly in hazardous waste programs and compliancy for the department. And that will lead a real heavily into one of the later conversations that we are going to talk about when we get into their advanced water purification rulemaking process. So it's going to be a great conversation. And Randy, a quick radio check from you as well.
Yep. Great to talk to you. Thanks for having us.
Outstanding. This is going to be a fun show for me because it's a first, three guests and not everybody here. The purpose of the engagement hour is to try to encourage the citizens to get involved. And a lot of times we talk about their involvement as being first responders, a service in the military, elected officials, but we also focus on the ability to help the community through running nonprofit organizations, being engaged in your community and in so many different manners. But we also have had many guests on this show that through government service are really serving the state and the community. And the three of you have a long litany of time in ADEQ and service to the government with a lot of things that sometimes are overlooked until people are really upset and they get to. So I'm going to real quick give each of you an opportunity to kind of tell us a little bit about your background that you want to share and what led you to this government service. So I'm going to start with Amanda, since you're in the studio. I think you're going to be the default go-to on all the first comments as Trevor and Randy think about what they're going to say. But can you just kind of give us your history, what got you with ADEQ and why you enjoy what you do?
Yeah, happy to do that. Yeah, I actually was very, very fortunate. I took an amazing class in college beginning of my senior year, and became very interested in environmental issues. I grew up in Arizona, spent a lot of time in rural Arizona, and I was fortunate enough to get an internship at ADEQ over 30 years ago, I will say. It's been many moons, and I enjoyed that internship so much. It was a community involvement internship where I actually got to go and engage with community members and understand their concerns about the decisions we were making at the agency, and I was then fortunate enough to be offered a permanent position in the agency, and I really felt like it was a calling And it's an honor to be a public servant in Arizona. So I've stayed for a little over 30 years now.
I never would have guessed 30 years. That's a long time inside the agency. And you've most recently, I believe it was in 2023, were promoted to your current position as deputy director. And can you kind of tell me what your responsibilities are?
Yes, that's
the key high level.
Yeah, high level. I do a little bit of everything now. Before, I was doing mainly legislative affairs, working on bills, working with the legislature, and now I do a little bit of everything. I work very closely with Trevor and Randy on new initiatives, lots of strategic planning, lots of talking to both citizens, people that live in the state, and also people that are regulated by our agency to understand how the decisions we make are impacting them, either in a business perspective or from a individual resident perspective. So I am working in all areas of the agency now, working very closely with our leadership team.
Well, and you are located here in Tucson, correct?
Actually, so, I am living in Tubac right now.
So Southern Arizona?
Yes,
that's
love
great.
Southern Arizona, absolutely.
Outstanding. Trevor, again, I was poking fun with you about the ASU degree. It's a great sports athletic rivalry, but there's nothing more important to this state than to have two great, strong universities. And I'd have to acknowledge my wife has also got a degree from ASU. So there is a place, and we love what you do. Can you go into kind of your background, how you gotten started with ADEQ? And you also have been there for quite a long time, I think, right after you graduated from college.
Right. I would love to start. I will note on the college issue, I don't have loyalty to ASU's sports programs, so just know that we can still be friends. I will tell you a little bit of my history. It's actually very similar to Amanda's. I graduated from ASU with a chemical engineering degree in 2001, thinking I was going to go change the world with chemistry. And it was a bad time for the economy at the point, and so during my senior year, I had applied for an internship with the department, and sure enough, they selected me to be an intern similar to Amanda. That was 23 years ago, 23 and a half years ago. Started working for the agency in the air quality division, writing, doing some air quality work as an intern, and then was offered a full-time position as an air quality permit writer. And I loved what I did. I loved the engineering associated with it, but it's a very rewarding mission to know that we're doing our best to protect the environment. And so at about, 2014-ish, I was asked to join water quality, and that was probably the best career move I've made because I was in leadership at the time, and it was just a great opportunity for me to see how different programs run. And I've stayed because I just love what we do. I love knowing that within the bounds that the authorities, the state leadership sets, we get to make sure that Arizona's waters and, air quality are protected. So I really enjoy what I do.
Well, it's always good when you've got a job that you're passionate about and you enjoy. And so I appreciate that you don't necessarily have the athletic loyalty to ASU, but where did you grow up?
I am a native to West Phoenix. In fact, about 12 years ago, I bought the house next door to where I grew up. So I'm in the city of Avondale.
Well, I will give ADEQ a lot of credit. If they're able to not only highlight the candidates they want through an internship process, but can keep you both on and then keep you for what's full and impressive careers at this point, too, that's they're doing something right. There's no doubt about that.
I agree.
All right. So, Randy, you're going to be the only non-Arizonan outsider, I think.
Indeed. I'm the black sheep.
So you've been with the ADEQ for over 19 years. And when I first looked at some of your resume, I went, BA in biology. Now, you went to Southern Illinois University back in Carbondale. So first, what brought you to Arizona? And then how did you get into the field you got when you got a BA in biology?
Yeah, what really brought me to Arizona is the opportunities that the state provides. Graduating school, I was looking around, realized I didn't really want to stay in Illinois, so I looked around the nation and looked towards Arizona, and my wife actually got a job out here as a neonatal intensive care nurse, so it looked like a great place to be, so I came this direction and have loved it ever since.
Well, thank you for her service to the community as well. Those are very difficult jobs, and anybody that's in the healthcare professions giving back to their community for sure. There's no doubt about that. So you started out in ADEQ in hazardous waste and a lot of compliance, a lot of you worked your way through up there before you became the water division or water quality division deputy director. Was that because of your biology background, or how did you fall into that that arena?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. So growing up in small town Illinois, really had that focus on the community and service. So knew when I came out here that I wanted to do something towards that end, a family history related to environmental protection. So headed towards ADEQ, and then I had, through my degree, an interest in, hazardous material, toxics, and its relations to the biology of the world we live in. So came in through HazWaste, worked there for many years, worked my way up to section manager, so was able to deal with hazardous waste, solid waste like landfills, as well as underground storage tanks, so fuel storage, things of that nature, both the regulation and the remediation of those things. The position came available in water, which actually brought me a little back closer to my biology degree. I had a focus in fisheries, so decided to jump over here to the water quality division. Lots of exciting stuff going on, so it's been awesome.
Well, I've got to ask, as a sitting member of the Arizona State Transportation Board, you were at ADOT for 4 years and decided you didn't want to stay in roads and infrastructure?
I was. You know, it was an interesting place to be in ADOT, and it really was that interface between the biology and the infrastructure. Being a natural resources technician, we really focused on preventing animal strikes, maintaining the right-of-way to protect people and the flora and fauna along it. So it was interesting and related, even though it seems like it might not.
Well, appreciate the service all three of you have done. I mean, your backgrounds are incredible. There's a lot of things, and the importance of ADEQ's mission as a whole is significant. It ensures whether, Matt Neely from Behind the Glass called up the air quality numbers just a moment ago. So air quality, water quality, all these things are important and impact our life. But so is having the systems that help you navigate both federal and state rules on permitting, so that they're... Things can happen, businesses can grow, but there's obviously got to be some oversight too. So, Amanda, you want to kind of set the table and maybe outline some of the difference between the federal role and what you do here in the state?
Sure. Yeah, I can. I'd be happy to do that. If I could start just by mentioning that we have over 20,000 regulated facilities and activities in the state. We're primarily a regulatory agency. We do have some voluntary and other types of programs, but primarily a regulatory agency to ensure that people that are conducting activities that could have some potential negative impact on the environment are conducting those activities in a safe way. We have about 570 employees based throughout the state, and our regulatory structure is really, for the most part, is based on federal law. So many of the federal environmental laws, like the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, ADEQ is delegated to implement those federal laws in the state of Arizona. So that's the vast majority of our regulatory structure. We do have some state-only permits, like the Aquifer Protection Permit Program, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit today, that are based only on state law. So it's a combination of state and federal law. We issue permits based on federal and state law, conduct inspections, conduct compliance activities, follow up compliance activities if necessary. And throughout that process, we try to engage with the communities that are going to be impacted by whatever activity is occurring in the form of early community engagement, public meetings, public notices, and really trying to draw the community into the regulatory decisions that we're making. Having said that, our regulatory structure is very prescriptive, and the areas in which we can engage and modify permits is very defined in law. So I think people have the idea that people come and talk to DEQ about their concerns, and that an opinion about whether or not a facility should occur is within our purview. That it's a very challenging thing, but we absolutely do the best we can to try and engage with communities and understand what their concerns are so we can address their concerns either in a permit or in some type of voluntary action.
And Amanda, that's a great lead into our bottom of the hour break. And when we come back, we'll get Trevor and Randy involved a little bit more talking about what the community's role is and what your rules are on giving air and water permits. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. We're talking with ADEQ leadership, and we'll be right back after the break. Good morning and welcome back from the break. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. And today we've got three of the leaders in the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. And we've been talking about their backgrounds, what got them involved. And you can just hear the passion in their voices. They truly enjoy what they're going to do. Now, the question is, you put out there that there's 20,000 regulated sites that you're responsible for in the state of Arizona. Can you talk to me about a little bit about what those type of facilities are and the role you play?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. So I think there's some types of regulated facilities that people wouldn't normally think of. For instance, your corner gas station, when you go and put gas in your car, most of those facilities have underground storage tanks that store the fuel. We regulate those tanks to make sure that the tanks are operating safely and that they're not leaking. We also regulate transfer stations and landfills, various different types of mining operations, hazardous waste treatment, storage, and disposal facilities, just a very wide variety of activities throughout the state. And in terms of our role as a regulatory agency, you know, we're just one portion of a much larger regulatory structure. So when somebody's going to begin operation, say, at a landfill, they would need to go through zoning and, you know, determine that the use of the land is appropriate and that, you know, the height of whatever they're building is appropriate. And in cases of mines, there's a fairly rigid federal process that they have to go to. So DEQ's role is very, very important, but it's a small piece of generally, in most cases, a much larger regulatory structure that a facility is operating within. And maybe it would be helpful to just spend a moment talking about how does a facility become permitted in the state? So, for instance, a mining facility, how would a mine come to DEQ and get a permit from us to operate? Maybe we can give an example of an aquifer protection permit at a mining facility. And Trevor, if I could ask you to maybe describe an average, what happens through the permitting process when somebody walks in the door wanting to get a permit from the agency for an APP.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Amanda. And just I will add two quick notes to the facilities we regulate. We regulate drinking water systems, right? The people who provide drinking water to residents, as well as wastewater treatment plants. And so those are actually the more numerous that from the Water Quality Division's perspective for that list that Amanda provided. If a facility, a mine, wants to get an aquifer protection permit, the typical way that they do that is they come meet with us and say, look, we're thinking about this facility. What do we need to do? And so we explain to them the regulations, the requirements, and what they have to submit to us. They go do that work and then come back to us, usually in a pre-application meeting where they show us their application. We'll go through it with them, tell them we've got gaps here or this is really good. They will make whatever adjustments are necessary. Then they officially submit that application to us. And that starts a clock for us to be able to process. And so that application is reviewed to make sure all of the components are there. It then goes to the technical side where the technical reviewers check to make sure that the proposed facilities at the mine, typically things like impoundments or storage, you know, tailing storage facilities or waste rock storage facilities, that they're going to meet all the technical requirements, including for stability, including for lining to make sure that the groundwater is protected or whatever other engineering controls they might have. It includes a review of the hydrogeology in the area, what underground sources of water they might impact. Once we've done all of that technical work, there is a requirement for us to do a public comment period to get comments from the public that might be concerned about the facility. As Amanda mentioned, we actually try to start that earlier. The legal requirement is a 30-day public comment period. We want the community to be aware of the facility. Mines tend to be controversial, so that we give them plenty of opportunity to have their voice heard. again, within the context of the framework of the regulations and statutes that we have, we take all of those comments, consider them carefully, we summarize them and respond in writing to each one of those, and then a decision is made whether to issue the permit. Oftentimes, if we do decide to issue the permit, it's a modified permit based on those public comments. And then they have their permit. And then so that, as Amanda said, that's one piece of the regulatory structure that they have to get before they can operate a mine.
So question, Trevor, does that same process go through for all the different type sites? I mean, Amanda laid out, you know, everything from the underground fuel storage facilities. You know, there's so many different sites you do. Do you go through that kind of detailed? Obviously, the mines are a little more high visibility, but does this have to occur for every site that wants to get permit from you?
So we have, in the Aquifer Protection Program, we have about 500, what I described for you is what's called the individual permit process, right, where we custom tailor the permit to the proposed facility. And we regulate about 500 facilities under an individual permit. This program and several of our other programs are similar, like our Clean Water Act program, and I know our air quality program as well, also create what are called general permits. And those are usually for smaller facilities where you might have, for example, a car wash or something like that that has some sort of small disposal system. We have general permits that people can apply for. And those general permits for the Aquifer Protection Program are actually in rule. So they go through the public process in the rulemaking. And then once they're in rule, facilities can just easily apply for them. And there's no additional requirements other than fees and making sure that they're in compliance. But the permitting is much faster under that general permit system.
So let's go back to the mines for a second, because they're obviously in southern Arizona. It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue with both the communities and then with the business sector, who believes that if the permitting and the process is followed, then the businesses should have the opportunity to begin. South 32 is under Fast 42 and Copper World. Those are the two you hear about all these. So can any of you, Amanda, I don't know if you want to take it or if you want to hand it off, can talk about the difference in those two processes and, more importantly, what is really the role of the community feedback? Sometimes I think we believe that we need to show up and be the loudest and then we win.
Yeah, I can start with that. And then Trevor, you can certainly add. So South 32 in particular, we have really, the community is very, very interested and has many concerns about that particular facility beginning operation. We've not been involved in the whole federal fast processing. That doesn't really impact us. Our delegated authority is very clear. And as I said earlier, it's fairly prescriptive. So that hasn't really impacted us or our decision making. We have really spent a lot of time in the community trying to deeply understand what their concerns are, and to the extent it has been possible, add things voluntarily to the permit that are beyond our minimum regulatory structure to provide additional assurances to the community. And it's very, very important. We also have a lot of other tools at our disposal to help the community understand what is happening at the facility and to address their potential concerns. One of them is our community science program, where we're working with a number of nonprofits in the area, and they are developing a more robust sampling protocol where they go out and actually take surface water samples of the streams and creeks in the area to determine what the quality of the water is. And at some point in the future, is that water quality being impacted by any mining activities in the area? So that's one tool that we have in our toolbox to help address community concerns. Trevor, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'll just add a little bit. So a couple thoughts, Ted, as you asked what's the role of public. I mean, really the rules and regulations we have are fairly prescriptive, as Amanda mentioned, and it's not a discretionary decision, right? We don't get to choose whether it's issued. If a facility meets the legal requirements, we're required by law to issue the an aquifer protection permit, for example. The public, of course, can help make sure that all of the work that we have done meets the requirements of law. I really appreciated Amanda's statement that knowing what the community is concerned about does give us some opportunity to strengthen the permit, to get the facilities to do some additional work, and as well make sure that we're being transparent if, we've done it. We have a compliance and enforcement function, so once we've issued a permit and a facility is now operating, we go do inspections. And, you know, those are things that we regularly do. But if it's a community concern, then we can make those inspection reports and any data we collect more open to the public for them to see, to help us, you know, make sure that the facility is operating in accordance with the law. Not talking about South 32 specifically, of course, but if some facilities decide while they're operating that, you know, maybe they don't want to do exactly what they're supposed to from an economic perspective, or they discharge and hope nobody sees it, those things are helpful for the community to help be our eyes and ears and give us complaints and give us that information so that we can make sure the facilities are complying with the law.
Well, I appreciate that feedback on both of them, because one, it eases some of the concerns from those folks who want to support the companies that are doing things correctly. If they meet the requirements, they get the permits. But the program that you talked about also gives the community a way to be involved in I won't say monitoring and then being able to submit and it being taken as fact. I assume ADEQ comes back out and confirms anything that the community brings to you. But it does give the community the ability to at least know that things are being watched over. But it's a fine line on the business side where, you know, I think there's copper was a huge part of Arizona. I think it's a need in the future. And I think we've got people that are leaning that way. But as long as everybody understands what the role is, it's not just he or she who yells loudest gets their way. It is based in facts, numbers, and data. So that was Trevor Bajori, who's the ADEQ Water Quality Division's director, and I'm with Amanda Stone, the deputy director for the department here in the studio. And we haven't forgotten Randy. We're going to go to a break right now, but when we come back, we're going to get into part of the rulemaking process, because people don't understand the citizens can help make the rules, as I understand, or at least provide input. But it's going to be for a program called Advanced Water Purification. I'm going to tease you a little bit. The water starts at the consumer, it goes to a waste treatment plant, it goes through advanced water treatment, and then it comes back to the tap. You'll have that to talk about on the backside of 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, Grant Kruger will be the host, and he will either be talking politics or food or perhaps the sector between both of those issues. So please join him tomorrow at 9 o'clock and support the entire Jump in Tucson radio hosts as we five different days, five different topics. So we hope you join us. So I've got the leadership outside, or we'll call it local leadership, and we'll play it as big as possible, but of the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, Amanda Stone has been with me. She's the deputy director of the department, and she's in the studio. I appreciate everything she's had to add. And Trevor Bajori is the director of the Water Quality Division. He played a pretty large role in the last segment, but we're going to turn to Randy Mattis, who's the Water Quality Division deputy director, because they are in the process of a rulemaking program, which is coming to the end. It started in June of 2022, and it's now at the final, finalizing the notice of final rulemaking. And a lot of people don't understand that there's a process when they set up these rules, and they work with the federal government to do it. And this one's going to be on advanced water purification. So Randy, this last segment's going to be a lot of you. So can you explain to us, A, what is advanced water purification, and why do you have to go through a rulemaking process, and what will that allow us to do?
Absolutely. So advanced water purification, I guess let's start with how wastewater is typically handled in Arizona. So in Arizona, generally our wastewater is either reused for irrigation, landscaping, things of that nature, injected into the groundwater where it eventually will be pulled out again and utilized as potable water, or discharged to a surface water, which may also at some point be utilized for drinking water. What advanced water purification does is it allows us to take this municipal wastewater, treat it through multiple advanced treatment processes, and then return it to directly to potable use without the need for re-injecting it into a groundwater to later pull it out, or discharging it to a surface water and then being pulled out of the surface water again to be utilized for drinking water purposes.
So can you explain what the rulemaking process was, and what is the rulemaking process going to establish?
Absolutely. So the rulemaking process for this one was very rigorous. We kicked off that process about 2 years ago now. We knew at the beginning that this would be a complex rule and that there would need to be a lot of investigation into the science, the technology, and regulatory impacts of the rule. So the first thing we did is we formed a technical advisory group that was composed of engineers, scientists, regulators, and utilities. And we had them work for a little over a year investigating what is the state of the art for advanced water purification, what other states have done as far as regulations, what's going on in other countries even, and posed several specific questions to them to get guidance about what our program should look like and what the, you know, what the optimal regulations are. After that, we utilized that information to create what we're calling our advanced water purification roadmap, which kind of laid out ADEQ's path to the final rule. Went out for comments again to the both the regulated community, the technical community, and the public, received comments on that document, and we used those comments in conjunction with the technical advisory group recommendations to develop our draft rule. That draft rule has been out now for several months, and we've received comments on that draft rule from the same commenters, including the public. And right now we are in the process of updating that draft rule based upon those comments, and we should be issuing the final rule here shortly, which will kick off the formal rule process, rule writing process, where there is a 30-day public and another 30-day public comment period. Additionally, we'll be out there pounding the pavement, getting the word out. That way we can get a broad range of comments on the document. And at the end of that comment period, we also will have a public hearing where folks can come in and be heard about the, you know, their perspectives on advanced water purification. So it's a lengthy process, but we really wanted to ensure that we had engaged early and often and with as broad of a community as possible on this topic, because it is so important for Arizona's water security in the future.
And absolutely, I think that's the key. That last comment was very important. There's so many different ways that we're looking at augmenting and innovating ideas to provide us more water. I mean, we know Arizona's Arizona has a water shortage, and we need to figure out other ways to do it. And I do believe this is one of the best ways, because even the CAP water gets treated. So it's really just about the purification.
Yep, that's absolutely true.
And this, as I understand, this rule will establish a permitting process for folks who want to get into the business of collecting and treating wastewater to meet these protective standards, so they meet the level of expectations that the citizens of Arizona would have.
Absolutely, yeah. This rule doesn't require any utility to do anything. It provides them another option where if they look at their source water portfolio and this looks like a good option for them, they're able to get this advanced water purification permit. When you look at the types of treatment and the amount of treatment and the rigor of the program proposed so far, you can see how this technology, when deployed, will not only treat water to be in full compliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act, but oftentimes will actually provide water that far exceeds the quality you typically find with other potable water sources.
Well, Randy, I appreciate you giving that information. azdeq.gov/AWP is where you can get to their fact sheet and more information on this. We've got about 30 seconds left. Amanda, I just want to leave you with some final thoughts.
It's really been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I just want for your folks that are listening to know that there's a lot of opportunities for engagement with the agency, and we'd welcome that engagement.
Amanda, Trevor, Randy, thank you very much for being on the show today. You've been listening to Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great day, and I hope to see you on Wake Up Tucson, or hear you on Wake Up Tucson at 8 o'clock on Friday.